Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety, gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, happy Tuesday, and here we go again with another Gear Garage Live Show. This is a show I try to do every Tuesday. I probably won't do it for a few weeks because I'll be out guiding trips for a few weeks now. But I will definitely come back to shows when I return. Today, I want to do a few things. First of all, talk about one of our sponsors I haven't talked about in a while, and that's GoRafting.com. This website, it's a website that has tons of subscriptions, but they work with an app called the Far Out app. And so all of their river descriptions are on the app. So you get the app. It's free, called Far Out. And then you buy from them river maps that you want. So instead of buying a physical map, which gets dated, you buy their app. You buy their map that's through their app. That's a lot of words. You basically buy the map from them that gets distributed through the Far Out app. It's a little confusing because they don't make the app itself. They make the maps that they sell through the app. Anyway, they're really good. I've used them. I have a lot of friends that have used them. I think it's the future. I think paper maps are cool, but people lose them and they get dated and whatever. The one thing I want to point out about, and they're a sponsor of our show, so I have to say this stuff, that they're great, but I really believe it. I wouldn't have a sponsor I didn't like and didn't use. And they have this bundle that is a screaming deal. For $60, you get all of their maps in this bundle. It's insane. It's basically all their maps, all the maps you would use: Grand Canyon, Middle Fork Salmon. Probably not. Most people aren't going to use the Fuddle Foo map. Even people that go to the Fuddle Foo are not going to use the map. So that one's kind of useless to me, at least, or I think it is. The Tassanshini, Ruby, the Rogue, like the Upper Klamath. Again, I probably wouldn't use these maps on a day trip. On most day trips. But these multi-day, like the Nugget Rogue, you know, whatever. I'm not going to use this map there. East Glacial, that's in Iceland. Nobody's going there. The Klickitat, somewhere I would use it because there's, you know, there's some important places. It's very continuous. You do kind of want to know where you're at. The Pequari, if you go down there, Costa Rica. White Salmon, I probably wouldn't use that one. Wind, maybe. But these multi-day runs, you know, the Illinois. That I did the Illinois map. I did the descriptions of the Illinois for them. It's I put a lot of information in there, sent some photos. It's a great map. And so I know you can buy these individually. Like you can buy the Illinois map. You can't click on it here, but these maps are like $10 to $30 each. You get them all for 60. And it's not like a recurring fee, like $60 a year. You pay $60 and you have access to these maps indefinitely. And they update the maps as they go. So when things change, they make them better. So just want to give a quick shout out for GoRafting.com and their maps. If you're a river runner, these things are pretty sweet. I know NRS has their version of this. This one's better. You just have to trust me. This one's better. I'm not going to get into why, but it's pretty amazing. Okay. And then I also want to quickly just talk about American Whitewater really quick today. If we're boaters, we should be members of American Whitewater. Nonprofits, a lot of nonprofits exist to represent their constituents. That's why they exist. They represent us. So if you're a whitewater boater, American Whitewater represents you in terms of river conservation, in terms of river access, in terms of safety information. They keep track. They have all kinds of safety information. They have videos about safety. They have safety codes. They keep track of accidents. And so this is an all-encompassing nonprofit built and designed and run to support boaters. And it's run by boaters. The people in the nonprofit are boaters. I've worked with a lot of nonprofits in the past, and sometimes I'll work with one trying to save an area, like a wilderness area or whatever. But the people that run it, they don't even hike, or they don't even care about the place that much. They just got the job. And then now running this nonprofit. That's not the case with American Whitewater. It's run by boaters, for boaters. It's not that expensive to join. And I just want to put it out there that it should be a responsibility of boaters to become members. They work on our behalf, and they need to say we represent a large number of people. The number of people they represent affects how much stuff they get done. And it's not that expensive to join. $35 a year to join. It's a deal. And if you're some sort of member of some other club, or let's see, hit join, $25 a year. It's not that much. You know, if you want to spend more, you can. But and if you spend a lot, like if you become like a platinum paddler, you can get some cool hoodie or some cool t-shirt. And so I'd highly recommend joining. Not only recommend it, but I would implore all of you out there to join. It again, and I'm going to make the statement that as a whitewater boater, it's your responsibility to join so that this group represents you and all of the boaters. It's your responsibility to help support the work they do for us. And I just can't say enough about how well run it is, how efficient they are, and how dedicated they are to helping us. So with that, let's get into questions. And the first question is, I'm interested in a pair of Cataract flip lines. And so for those of you that don't know, I'm selling, by the way, I'm not going to make myself big today. I might or might not, but I have a case of poison oak that's covering half of my face. So it's not a pretty look. I'm in the middle of a poison oak attack. Well, I'll make myself big and you all can see how bad this looks. It's a little puffy over here, but it's on my neck. Anyway, I make these Cataract flip lines. I don't make them. Somebody else does. I'm working with somebody who makes them, and I just sell them. And they're stretchy. It's just basically a bungee with overwebbing. This isn't rocket science. You can make these on your own if you just bought some webbing and some bungee. And the idea is they stretch between the D-rings on the inside of a cataract, and then you can pull on it as a flip line. That's what we're about to talk about. And we're slowly putting these products out. And I want to be pretty clear about, let me add this back, about these things, is they are an added entrapment hazard. If you have this is a rope you could get tangled in, even though it's stretched tight and it's up against the boat. You could put a leg in there. You could wrap a leg in it somehow. You could wrap an arm. You are adding a potential entrapment hazard to your boat in an effort to be safer, or more responsible is probably the word, because it allows for a very quick reflip. This is a risk reward thing. You're choosing to add a little bit of danger in the hopes that if you flip over in your cataract, the quick reflip is net safer than the entrapment you're adding. And in a lot of cases it is. If you're running like class four, that's continuous, class five, where you need to get that boat back over quick. This is a sort of a critical thing. If you're running class three and it's pull drop, then I'm not going to recommend this, because you don't need that quick reflip. Pull out, take a flip line in your, do I have one here? I don't have one here. We sell flip lines. You can just get a piece of rope. You don't need to buy one of mine. Just get a piece of rope, clip it on your cataract, flip it over. Old school. You have the time. This is a tool for when you don't have the time, for when you're doing, like, let's say, North Fork American, Giant Gap, North Fork Payette, The Wind, Illinois at high water. And low water, there's usually time between the rapids on the Illinois to flip a boat back over. High water, Illinois. What else can I even think of? Where would you want these? You know, all those eccentric runs that we don't even talk about. All the, like, I can't even think of one right now. But things, the Tuolumne at high water, that's a good one. Cherry Creek. Yeah, stuff like that. So this is a class 4 or 5 continuous boater person thing. And so how do the D-rings attach a D-ring? However you want. Yeah. So the old ones. So these were inspired by the ones that Dave Nissen made from Mad Catter. And Dave stopped making them. And he added clips on these things, and like fancy clips. You just clip them onto your D-ring. I decided to keep this simple. We just have a little ring. You can carabiner it on. The easiest way is just get a little cam strap and cam strap it on. That allows you some easy adjustment to make it tighter or looser if you need to. However you want. Tie on the shoelace. Probably won't work well with the shoelace, but it would work. But this is just, you know, ends in a ring, and you can choose a way you want to attach it. Because I noticed with Dave Nissen's, when I have different cataracts, they were hard to attach. Let's just say that. With different cataracts. I wish they were just rings, and I could could adjust them with cam straps based on what I wanted. Okay, so back to the question, the original question. So I have a 14-foot wave destroyer, and there are 90 inches between the internal front and back D-rings. Internal front, yes, exactly. And you want to, there's a lot of ways to attach these to your boat. You can attach them to the frame if you want. The way I recommend, I think, is the easiest, is attaching them to the internal front and back D-rings. And he does not see 90 inches on my size chart. Any chance you'll have something that will work with your River Hardware website? Any chance you'll have something that will work on your River Hardware website? So going to the website, I'll show you this product so you can see what he's talking about. Let's go to the homepage and find flip lines and bungee flip lines. There's some photos here of them in action. And there's a size chart here. And I haven't chosen to make them big enough. And it goes up to 79 inches between D-rings. And I haven't made them for boats bigger than this yet for a number of reasons. One is that we generally don't see 14-foot rafts, 14-foot catarafts running these class 4 or 5 rivers that I'm talking about, right? If you're running the Wind, North Fork Payette, most people are on like 12.5-foot boats, I believe. So that's one reason. Two is I'm being pretty cautious to test these out. To, you know, it takes time to like work with the guy producing them and get them and put them on the boat and make sure they work correctly, because the geometry of them is kind of interesting. I haven't tested the geometry of them that big yet. I hate to sell you when I think works and have it not work. Because the 14-foot wave destroyers are normally on class 4+5, the runs, I don't think they need these. If you're mostly Disney, you can do it like class 2, class 3, like pull drop. I think these are maybe adding some risk that you don't need because of the time. Most people aren't taking these 14-foot boats, these big boats, down really hard rivers. Also, when it's that long between the D-rings, it's just a very long strap. It's more likely to be tangled. So I'm a little hesitant to make these for bigger boats, because the chances of getting caught in these is increased. 90 inches between D-rings is a long distance to put a strap. So it's a lot of my thoughts out there that may or may not make sense, but it's what I'm trying to say is I don't think that in general, these flip lines, the risk reward makes sense for bigger boats than 12.5 feet. And so I haven't made them for that big yet. Now, over time, as I sell more of them and I test them out more, and maybe I get a bigger boat, I might change my mind. But in my brain right now, I just don't think that putting this on a 14-foot boat is that makes the most sense. What you might want to do, though, if you really want them, is instead of attaching them between the D-rings, attach them at the frame, which I have to see your frame and how everything works. Instead of going 90 inches from D-ring to D-ring, choose a shorter distance that you can attach them. That's again why they have the little rings at the end instead of clips, because you can then cam strap them to your frame or something else in the interior of the boat, and then they might work. Like, find something that is 74 to 79 inches wide and try the orange ones. But also the problem with the 14-foot wave destroyer is you got to make the triangle with these. So when they're straight, I can make myself big again, which I really don't want to do with my poison oak face. When they're against the boat, they're straight. When you pull on them, they make an angle. And that angle may not be enough to easily flip the boat back over. Like, that distance may not be enough if your boat is really wide. If you have a 14-foot boat, you might have a super wide boat. And once you stand on the tubes holding the thing, it may not come far enough, if that makes sense. So I haven't tested it. I'm a little hesitant to tell you which size is going to work, what's going to work, because I just haven't tested it yet. So the answer is we're very slow to release these. I want to make sure they're really good. And I'm not convinced they make sense on the bigger boats yet. Again, I might change my mind. Sean asks, could the questioner use a couple cam straps to extend? that's a possibility. I don't want to recommend that again, because I don't really want a 90 inch rope on both sides of your boat. I'm a little hesitant to recommend that. Also, like, if there's not enough, going back to the stretch, like if some of this thing, right, is cam strap, when you go to pull on it, it may not pull far enough for you to actually get leverage on the boat. I'm not sure if that makes sense. I have to draw a picture. I'm not going to draw a picture today, but this is a long way of answering your question, which is any chance you have something that will work on a River Hardware website? These might work, but no guarantees. And I really don't want to do returns. So please don't buy these things and then go, oh, it didn't work. I'll send it back. Because I just dealing with returns is a huge pain. Maybe in a year I'll make one that will fit a bigger boat like that. But my real suggestion, instead of using these Cataract flip lines, which are really cool, is get one of our, let me get it right here. Get one of our flip lines. These things are sweet. And then carry this near PFD and flip it old school. If you don't need that super quick reflip, this flips fast enough, and is then there's not some hazard attached to your boat, right? And I would say for most people, these flip lines are the way to go. These flip lines also work as like boat anchors, tree anchors, rock anchors. You can do really cool mechanical advantage stuff with these because they slide over carabiners really nicely. I'm a huge fan of these. And here's a video. Let me go back. This is what it looks like when I'm talking about, and I'm sorry, I can't make this bigger. I don't think, but maybe I can. This is what it looks like when you're using these flip lines. This is a quick reflip after Ramshorn before the next rapid. So you get back on and you need to have the fitness to get on back on that quick. You use to flip it back over. And Greg, who's in this video, he was back on his oars. That next rapid starts right there. And he climbed up in his frame, got back on. So this is what it's for. You know, when you flip in a rapid, let's watch it again. You flip in a rapid and you need to get back on in moving water, flip it back over and get going before the next one. If you're not running rivers like this, I don't think it makes sense. And the key here, let me pause it right here. You want all of this geometry here to be right. This is what I was trying to explain earlier. Like you want, see how he's leaning way back. He's even on his knees. He's not even standing up. If it doesn't go that far back, if you, again, like I haven't tested the geometry yet. If the bungee doesn't bungee that far back, you're not going to be able to get that flip. And so this might be a bigger boat. I can't remember what size boat this is. And more people are maybe making these or will make these and may make the size. But I definitely want to make sure I'm making them right. And so I can't guarantee right now that ours are going to work or that they will. And I also, to reiterate, not even sure that you want to be using them. Okay, next question. Shoes. Just listen to your latest podcast on river shoes. Take a look at the Corkers Devil's Canyon, Portland, Oregon. They're flexible and have a BOA lacing system. Best part, they have interchangeable soles depending on your substrate. Okay. Interchange. Oh, what's a substrate? What was the name of that again? I'll Google it. Corkers Devil's Canyon. Corkers. I'm typing into Google right now. And shoes. Oh man, my typing is terrible. Okay, here we go. So we got Devil's Canyon. Okay, so that's what BOA lacing system is. It's like not laces, it's just like a little lacy thing. Yeah, I mean this is an option. I will never wear these because they're really hard to swim in. They're probably really nice for walking around on shore. I don't think these work for kayaking. These are raft specific. You know, if you're doing the kind of whitewater, like if you're doing like the Alsek and Tatsunshini, these might be nice. Like rivers that where you're like walking on rocks, walking in some mud. I mean, I don't know for sure, but like honestly, the rivers I do, there's always a chance I can swim. And these just look like heavy on my feet and hard to swim in. So I personally probably wouldn't go with these. But of course I haven't tried them. And they definitely won't fit in the kayak. These are definitely made for something burly, but super cool to make in Portland. A BOA, that's cool. Rock solid guarantee. That's amazing. Yeah, I think, for some of you who are like, want really good ankle support, really solid foundation, something that probably grips on rock really well, this is probably pretty cool. It looks like they might make these in felt, which, that's interesting. Ideal for slippery aquatic environments. I've never even heard of, these have studs. Studded Klingon sole. Ideal for extremely slippery aquatic environments where felt is not an option. Unless demanding wet wading conditions. Well, yeah, I don't know. It's cool. It's not for me, but Okay, next part of the question. Wading boots have been used felt soles for decades. Yeah, I've seen fishermen use them. They seem like they work great. I think they wear out. So I think if you're as a boater who walks a lot, I'd wear them out pretty fast. Felt soles, the metal studs, and you're an all-star on stick rocks. Yeah, metal studs. That's interesting. If you need to hike to put in, use the Vibram rubber lug soles, then switch to felt soles. It makes some ugly shoes and sandals too. Yeah, I mean, that's – thanks for sharing it. It's not for me because it's like, the type of river I do, swimming is not – swimming happens sometimes, and I don't think I'd want to swim in these. Although maybe they're fine. I just haven't tried them. Which brings me to, I just ordered some of these Palm Gradient boots that I'm going to be testing out here pretty soon. Let me see if I can find them. Why is stuff so hard to find on the internet? Palm Gradient boats. I'm trying to find it on Palm's website. Let's go to Palm. Let's go Palm Shoes. There we go. Man, you can't just, it's amazing how the people that are selling them third party beat the manufacturer. Palm, let's type in Palm, kayak. Man, why is this so hard to find? Here we go, footwear. So Palm Equipment just released this new Gradient 3 boot. And it won some big award at a show a couple weeks ago. And this looks pretty sweet. It looks like it has a burly-ish sole. But not over the top. It has ankle support, but nothing crazy. I like lacing shoes personally, so I'm glad they're laced. Although those laces could get caught on something. It's a potential, entrapment hazard. I've seen in kayaks, people have a non-locking carabiner in their kayak where their water bottle goes. If you swam, if your feet were coming out, you could get a lace stuck in a non-locking carabiner. That's always in the back of my head. So I wouldn't have a non-locking carabiner anywhere, but whatever. This is what I'm excited to test out and what could be the future. Durability will be an issue. Are they durable? But this looks like maybe the next hot shoe out there. Oh, I'm not even showing it. Here we go. Sorry, everyone. This shoe right here. I think this could be the future. And they come in black and then that cool, those cool colors. And this Vibram sole, I would assume that Palm made shoes that grip on wet rock really well. This is a paddling company. They make paddling gear in the UK. So I would assume these are really good for wet rock. But I'll report back. I'm gonna try these out for the next couple of weeks and I'll report back if they're good or not. I think they're pretty cool. All right. So we're pretty much done with the show. Sean has a couple comments and then we're out of here. A 90-inch flip line might be so long you'd be in the water before the boat started to flip. Yeah, I mean, that is the key with all these flip lines, these cataract flip lines, is matching the distance between D-rings in the boat so that when you pull, you're standing in the right place with the right leverage. It's not easy. And that's why I'm starting to make these for small boats where I think they're the most useful. And as we experiment with them, as we try them out on different boats, I might make some different sizes in the future, but right now I'm kind of going to stick to what I have. Cool. So yeah, these Palm Gradient boots look pretty cool. And I think this is it for this episode. Thank you all for continuing to support the show. Please know I'm probably not going. Oh, I want to do one more thing. Sorry, I have one more thing on my agenda. Let's go back. Mechanical advantage. I've done a bunch of videos, or I'm about to do a bunch of videos on like mechanical advantage safety. One's going to come out today about mechanical advantage safety and things we can do to be more responsible working with mechanical advantage. I just did this really cool set of experiments. I set up a bunch of mechanical advantage systems. Oh, and by the way, I'm getting a zillion people emailing me, calling me, texting me saying, Zach, you should work with a how not to guy. Like he's have him test this and have him test that. I reached out to him and he said he got back. Actually, he eventually got back to me, but somebody got back to me and said, we're just not taking stuff on. Because I wanted him to test this. Like I tested and it broke my little measuring device. This is the previous measuring device I had to measure forces. I think it's called a dynamometer. I think the people who make it call it something else. Anyway, it's permanently deformed because I went over 23 kilonewtons and I wanted them to test it. And they said, no, we're not taking on stuff. We're too busy. And people keep emailing me saying, hey, you should work with the how not to guy. I've asked, they're busy. I'm good. But they got back to me and told me about their line scale, which I ended up buying. These things are amazing. This is what they use. I have two of them now to measure forces on things. And I bought these originally to do input-output tests on mechanical advantage. And they weren't very accurate. It's hard to do when they're not accurate. These are way more accurate. These are cool. And so I finally, what I would do is set up a mechanical advantage system, put one by the raft and then one on what I was pulling. And I was able to measure the input versus output, which is the effective mechanical advantage. And up here in the chart, up here on the whiteboard is sort of a preview of my results if you like this kind of stuff. Some interesting things I learned along the way. One, the input and the output were off a little bit because these aren't perfect. I mean, they're really close, but like they measure slightly differently. But trust me, this was way worse. This would have been like 0.8 and 1.1 at times. It was pretty bad. So straight pull should have been 1-to-1 or maybe a little bit less, but it was a little bit over. Some things, and I always wanted to know what the effective mechanical advantage of a transport hitch with rope was. 1.13-to-1. That's what I got with the rope and carabiners I used because there's so much friction in the system. But I did it with transport hitch with this webbing instead, and this webbing slides over carabiners nicer. And they got 1.37-to-1, which is kind of cool. And then I did a vector pull on top of that, and it got 2.6-to-1, which is nice. That's nice mechanical advantage. I did a 3-to-1 and found with the gear I have, and I have all top-of-the-line stuff. If you're not using Rock Exotica pulleys and good rope, you're not going to get the same result. I got 2.5-to-1. But I also was curious if I had a redirect, what happens? And I got 2.23-to-1. So it took a little bit of mechanical advantage away. A super interesting thing was it was easier to get more pull. So I was able to pull more. This is the 0.84 kilonewtons because I wasn't like in the bushes because I just went to the grass. So I pulled with more force because I was in a better place to pull. Got the same output on both, which was just luck. So sometimes if you do a redirect, it allows you to pull more because you're standing in a better spot. And then I did a vector pull on a 3-to-1, 2.2-to-1, didn't do that great. And then just for fun, did a 5-to-1 and 9-to-1. So it's a quick talk through this stuff. Super interesting. I want to dive deeper into some of these things when I have time and do some more videos because these things are accurate, easy to work with, rad. So thank you to the How Not To guys for suggesting I get those. And I think that's it for this episode. Hopefully next time I see you all, I will not have a raging case of poison oak.